ball spark.
You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Friday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Get into all kinds of football. We'll talk college football, what happened last night in Arizona's first loss, and also high school football, of course, because it's a Friday, and that's where we're going to start. Joining us now is the longtime voice of the Clinton Red Tornadoes. The Elks and the Red Tornadoes will battle it out at the Tornado Bowl tonight. It is Dennis Smith. Dennis, how are you this morning?
Hey, great, Aaron. How you doing?
Oh, doing wonderful. Jared's alongside with me. Looking forward to tonight, a game that I think really kind of both of the teams need to see where they're at with some of the opponents they've been playing recently. Just kind of give us an overview of the Red Tornado season so far.
Well, and I do agree with your assessment. I think it's an important game for both teams. I think both teams will be in the playoffs. Let me state that right off the bat. Of course, people from Clinton are not strangers to Dave Meadows. Dave was one of the very successful coaches that Clinton has enjoyed over the years, and three state championships, and all went about, I don't know. I know he was here at least 10 years. Of course, this was back in the late 70s and through the 80s, through a good part of the 80s. He was actually the head coach when I got started my broadcast career. So kind of dates things a little bit. But the one thing about Dave Meadows' teams is they were fundamentally sound. They knew what they wanted to do. I haven't really had the opportunity to see any film, but just talking with some of our coaches and kind of getting some background information, it sounds a lot like, Coach Higbee mentioned to us that it was almost like playing ourselves. You know, it was a mirror image. You know, both teams rely on different aspects, but I can remember when Dave was coaching, you know, five-man fronts with the norm and defensively in I formation. You know, probably the one difference between him and Mike Lee. Mike Lee loved the pitch sweep. Dave would run it, but he also liked the blast out of the eye. Coach Abey said they run a lot of blast, which didn't surprise me at all. You know, as far as Clinton this year, I think probably the areas of concern, we were replacing an outstanding tailback who had started at tailback for 3 years and just didn't know where he was going to come from. We actually have two young men that hadn't played a lot of tailback in high school. In fact, both of them were more, you know, slot backs, wide receiver type. And they have both just had they're both fast. They're both quick. Neither one of them's very big, but they have really stepped up their game, and they both had tremendous success. And of course, along with that, you're concerned about the offensive line. Well, Clinton was blessed. Most of the kids that played a lot on the offensive line from last year returned, and they've come a million miles from where they were last year. And that's probably been the thing that really has been, I wouldn't say surprising, but it's been a very strong positive for this football team. Coach Higbee has told me several times that, you know, it just goes to show if you play hard enough and you listen and you try to get better, eventually you will. You know, we're not especially big. We don't have a bunch of 6'5 guys, you know, and weigh 230, 240 across the front line. But man, have they opened some holes. So I think that's probably one of the big keys for Clinton. Can they still do that? Clinton's running the football. We can throw it, but our game still running the football. And the other thing I think is the defense. We did lose some key contributors on defense, especially in the secondary, and so that was a little bit of a revamp. But it has played well. The front seven, I think we might have lost maybe one or two players from the front seven. So most of them were back. But we've had a couple of kids step up big time in that. And the defense has played, for the most part, very well through the season.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, I was going to ask you, Dennis, you mentioned the passing. You know, looking at the stats, it's not going to impress anybody as far as the inflation of numbers. But I think that's because, quite frankly, Clinton doesn't have to pass if they're running it so well. But is Clinton confident in the passing game with Caden Powell? He has an arm. We've seen that firsthand. But if they're forced to do it in third and long situations, are they more inclined to, you know, run a pitch sweep and see what they can get? Or are they going to throw it? Is Higbee confident in his quarterback's passing ability?
Yeah, I think so. Caden has a strong arm. Last year, probably the biggest concern was giving him enough time to set his feet, and also accuracy was an issue at times, not constantly, but at times. And he's been, for the most part, he's been on the money this year. And again, don't have the gaudy stats, but we've had a couple receivers that have, you know, both of them played a little bit last year. And, in fact, one of them played quite a bit last year because he's a senior this year, but the other one was the freshman last year. But he came on late in the year. Jared, you've hit it on the head. We just hadn't needed to, especially since district play started. We've been very successful running the football, and teams have got to prepare for a lot of different things. Probably one of our best kept secrets is a fullback. He's a tough runner, but he doesn't run very much. But he's also an excellent blocker, and he's had a very good year. And he can run the football. He just hasn't been called on that much. When you got a couple of thoroughbreds in the backfield. And I think Coach Higbee's done a good job of getting them both in the game. I mean, make sure they're both getting carries, they're both getting experience. Because you got to remember, neither one of them played tailback when he was in junior high. I don't think the other one ever had. And they have both just exceeded everybody's expectations, certainly mine. Maybe the coaches weren't, because they both were fast. Everybody knew they were fast, and it's what made them effective as receivers. But they both pretty much moved to the, on offense, pretty much moved to the backfield. They usually average about the same amount of carries every game. And their statistics are remarkably very similar. And I attribute that. They've got holes to run through. So, I don't know. You're asking if we got into a situation where we had to have it. Yes, I believe we can. And I think the key will come, the key is Powell having enough time. And for the most part, he has. He's had a game or two that seems like Heritage Hall, we had some issues, but they had a couple of very good defensive, probably the best two defensive linemen we faced. Now, Coach Higbee says Elk City has three that he thinks are very good. And he said it'll be, we're going to have to work hard. I'm just excited. I'm excited for Day, Coach Meadows, because, I had a friend ask me when he became a coach what I think. I said, well, if the kids will listen and buy in, you'll be winning sooner than later. And sure enough, it looks like they have.
Yeah, you're talking about Aaron Seabolt and Nate Jones, the two guys that are the tailbacks. I wonder if it's interesting to me not realizing that they hadn't played a bunch of tailback, because it feels like there's sometimes where when they're running the sweep, they're following Caden, and next thing you know, they're out the gate. But it seems, or feels like to me, just watching that the cutback lanes, they see those so well. Do you think that you can attribute that a little bit to being more out in the open as receivers and kind of seeing the whole field? Or is that just kind of something they had the innate ability to do?
You know, that's a good question, and I hadn't really thought of it like that. And you're exactly right. They both seem to have a knack for finding the cutback lanes. And when they cut, they cut. But I tell you, one of the things that's also been interesting to me, these are two kids that are tough to bring down. Even though they're not, you know, large in stature, you know, I think one of them goes 5'10", and the other one goes 5'8", 5'9". But both of them are in the, you know, 155, 160 range. But they're tough to tackle. Nate Jones has demonstrated more times than not that you're not going to arm tackle him, and you better wrap him up. Seabolt, very similar. If I had to pick, I'd hate to have to pick which one's faster. I've always wanted to ask him who's faster. Because they both have tremendous speed. I'm sitting here thinking, I can't think of one time either one of them was run down from behind. I mean, once they clear that, you know, unless it's somebody on an angle or something like that, and even then, that's a tough load to handle. I've seen that happen more than once, you know, defensive back have an angle, they have the vision. They have, you know, they have a vision. Know when they get close, and all they do is adjust the run, and that back may tackle him, or he may be grabbing it there because they've just left him, you know, just cut and left him. They've been fun to watch. It's as I said, for me, it was a very pleasant surprise that we would not have one but two backs that have played very well thus far in the season.
Well, Dennis, I've been on both sides of this rivalry, obviously, and it's a very, very fun game. But it's been very Clinton heavy as of late. Let's look at that. What do you see in Elk City? How can Elk City have success against Clinton tonight?
Oh, I think probably, and again, part of this is my knowledge of how of watching Dave Meadows' teams in the past. I think they want to control the football. I think you heard the philosophy, as long as you have the ball, the other team's not scoring. Well, I think that's the way Dave liked to play. He liked to control the ball. Clinton has had quick strikes a lot. Now, we have shown the ability to drive the ball, but I would say probably 65-70% of our scores have come on chunk plays, you know, anywhere from, you know, 30 to 60, 70, even 80 yards out. And, you know, the question is, can Clinton reverse that if Elk City's defense is not going to give up that play? You know, and I have no idea how they're going to play it, but if they're going to make you work for it, can Clinton do that? And the same thing, can Elk City control the ball? Can Clinton's defense get them off the field? I mean, it works for both sides. Can they get the other team off the field to get the ball back to their offense? I think that's the interesting question for both teams. As you said, some of the competition in district play has not been the best, and it's just hard to tell. I think turnovers will play a huge key, and I don't think either team – at least I know Clinton hasn't been giving the ball up very much. They had a little bit of problem early in the year, but I'm hard pressed to remember any game where they've had more than one in the last, certainly since district play started. And I suspect Elk City's very similar. I don't know that. I just suspect they are.
Yeah, that's. I think in the turnover margin, the Elks are way, way in the positive.
Well, I don't have it in front of me, but they're definitely in the plus. They don't give it up. They take it away. They had six against Weatherford. They took the ball away
three last week.
Nine. Yeah,
nine in the last two games.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've been pretty stout.
It feels like to me this is going to be about a 2-hour game with everybody just running the football.
Yeah. It really does.
our coach mentioned him. I do a pregame interview usually the night before, and he mentioned, you know, we were talking, and this is something I think is it'll be great for these kids. I think I'm expecting a huge crowd.
Yeah.
I think Elk City's excited. I think they'll bring a huge fan base. I hope they do. I know Clinton will be out in droves. It'll be a great high school atmosphere. And Coach mentioned it to me on the radio last night that if you're any kind of high school football fan, you know, this Tornado Bowl on Friday night is the place to be. And I agree with that. I think it has a making of a tremendous game. Lots of knowledge of the teams. Interesting aspect that Elk City's coach is a former very successful Clinton High School coach, and Clinton has had a good year this year, and Elk City has as well. They've both played well throughout the year. I think the records overall are identical.
Mm-hmm.
I think Elk City lost the one game to Bethany, and that's ironically that's who Clinton has for their last game next week. So I know our coaching staff feels like, besides Clinton, these are the two teams that are at the top of the pack, and records would indicate that. And I just think when you get to, you'd like to have played two or three of those games. You know, we've had one game where we felt like, our first district game was close. And ironically, I think that's the team that's going to finish in fourth, mm-hmm. The rest of them they've been over by halftime. And, you just not sure how far, how much stress that'll be when you've got kids that are not even playing, certainly the fourth quarter. And a lot of them, there was two or three times most of the starters didn't play after halftime.
We're hanging out. Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
No, go ahead.
Hey, we're hanging out with Dennis Smith, the voice of the Clinton Red Tornadoes. You mentioned his name a couple of times, and for at least my lifetime, I mean, Dave being over there, I was a little kid, but Mike Lee has been such a huge name, and that program was unbelievable for all of those years that he was there. Does it feel like Coach Higbee has kind of started to kind of make his name as the guy? Replacing, it's Clinton went through a little bit of a struggle trying to find that right guy after Mike retired. Does it feel like Coach Higbee is kind of taking that mantle and starting to really run with it?
Well, I like what Coach Higbee's doing. I'll start with that. I don't think it's fair to compare him to
sure.
Dave Meadows or Mike Lee. Now, ironically, Coach Higbee will coach on Mike Lee's staff at Clinton for several years. So a lot of the things that you see Clinton doing are probably very similar to what Coach Lee did. Coach Lee is very visible around the program. He's, I know him and Coach Higbee are friends, and I know they talk a lot. I think there's that influence with him just simply because he did coach with Coach Lee for several years. In fact, he was on the staff when Clinton's last state championship, which I believe was 2012. And of course, I'm very optimistic just because of what I've seen him do. He's been to last year they made it to the state finals and with a team that I don't think anybody thought would get that far.
Mm-hmm.
But they really started playing well towards the end of the season and it just carried right into the playoffs. And you, which is what you want. I mean, playoff time, you won't be playing your best football. And he seems to have had a knack for that since he's been here. So I think the prospects are very good. I know he's respected by the kids. I think he feels like he has a good staff. So I think the prospects for him to make his mark are excellent. And he obviously being a Clinton homer, if you will, or Clinton fan, You hope that's true, because I guarantee you those broadcasts are a lot more fun when you have success than when you don't.
You're telling us, man.
Yeah, I just think in previous years, this has been a fun time.
Oh, my gosh. It's like Christmas every Friday night all of a sudden.
We wake up happy now. We're looking forward to game days. The last couple seasons has been a little rough, but yeah, it's been a struggle, but it's been fun this year. To your point, the Mike Lee and Higby comparison. Legend has it that Mike Lee was the one who made that call against Blanchard with the halfback pass. Legend. That's just a rumor I heard that he was texting in Higby or something or trying to relay that play. But that was very Mike Lee-esque.
I can't say whether that's true or not. I have no idea. Would it have been something that Mike would have said, hey, this might work. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
You know, and again, to that point, I've seen pictures of the home fans at Clinton, and it looks like days of old. I mean, there's just not a seat in the house when Clinton is playing, and I think tonight it's going to be packed. The whole bowl is going to be packed. I'm pretty sure Elk City will travel well. It's going to feel like, late 90s Clinton Oak City.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to be looking for Bob Berry Jr. to fly in on the helicopter and hang out for a little bit.
Hopefully it doesn't rain like that. But, my final thing I want to bring up, and we'll let you go, but tonight they're doing a thing to honor a special man in Ron Engel. Elk City graduate, was a multi-sport star over here, and of course a great coach, great man over here in Clinton. Speak about Ron and what you remember about him.
Well, I'm thankful I had the opportunity to know Ron Engel. He's just one of those exceptional people that never met an enemy, okay? Or if they meet you, he's your friend. And he was a great encourager. I was fortunate enough to have a son play while he was still coaching, and my older son and Coach Engel was always trying to encourage him. He was fairly young when he played, but I've seen that with several things. Coach Engel was an encourager. He was a positive person, and he was a great asset to Clinton. I mean, he coached several different sports, of course. And the unique thing about Ron Engel is he had the opportunity to bridge some great head coaches. If I remember right, he came on when Coach Fraser was here, was part of his staff two different times. Coach with Dave Meadows, and he and Dave became great friends. Dave spoke at his service. And then he was very instrumental in helping Mike Lee come on. Mike will tell you, anybody that wants to listen, that one of the things that immediately attracted him the job was Ron Engel was the athletic director. And he said, I can't tell you how many times that I'd be down about something or thinking not sure where to go, and I could go spend 15 minutes in Ron Engel's office and come out and be thinking, why was I ever worried about that? You know, that's the type of things that Ron Engel could do. He could make you feel like you were the most important person in the world, and he always had sound advice. I don't know what it is, but some people just have that ability to say the right words at the right time. That's Ron Engel. And he was well liked by everyone. I'm not sure if he set the record for how long he was athletic director, because he was athletic director. I mean, he was actually, I believe, the athletic director before he quit coaching. But he served for a number of years, pretty much almost the whole time that Mike was the head coach. I think Mike took over as athletic director maybe 2 or 3 years before he actually left the head coaching job. I don't remember. But Ron Engel was the athletic director, And he was that way with everybody. It wasn't just football. He'd coached baseball over here for years. And more times than not, you'd see him at different events. And he liked watching the kids. He liked watching them improve. And his words of encouragement, I know he would tell kids stuff and just make their day. I've heard more than one player, one former player, someone say that. And he was like that even after he retired completely. You know, you'd see Ron, and boy, every day was a great day, and he'd ask, want to know how you were and how your kids were. And, you know, next thing you know, you're spending 20, 30 minutes talking to him, and you come away feeling, man, this is a great day, isn't it? That's just the type of person Ron was. So any accolades, I was so happy when he was inducted into the Coaches Hall of Fame because he needed to be, he should have been, and he was. And I'm happy that they did it while he was was still with us. And I can't say enough good things about Ron Engel. And I doubt you could find anybody in Clinton that have a bad word to say about Ron Engel.
You know, I grew up in the church with Ron, and he treated me like a son, you know, and that's, you know, that's a church family. But you talk about him talking to you, and I'd walk in the church, he'd talk to you, and then you hear the organ start to play and the hymn start to sing. It's like, well, we got to get in there. But it's going to be a special night, and I'm glad that Clinton's doing that while Elk City is over there, because he's a son of Elk City, but you know, and made his career at Clinton and had an impact on many lives. So it's going to be a special night.
Very many, many lives, innumerable, and it was a positive impact. Yeah. Trust me, very positive. And he was well loved and respected. And I agree with you. There's not too much you can do to give tribute to a good man like that.
Yeah. Well, Dennis, thank you so much for your time here on a Friday morning discussing all kinds of great things Elk City Clinton related. We'll see you over there tonight, and good luck to the Reds.
Thank you, gentlemen. I enjoy visiting with you as always, and I think it'll be a tremendous high school atmosphere, football atmosphere. I'll just throw my two cents in. If you miss this game, you're probably going to regret it. I feel that way. I feel that's the kind of game.
I hope you're right, and it definitely has the makings for that. All right, thank you, Dennis. Have a great day.
Thanks, Dennis.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Bye-bye.
You betcha. Dennis Smith, longtime voice of the Clinton Red Tornadoes.
Well, he dated himself, so we can call him a legend, right? The legendary voice.
See, now we can look back and see when Dave started over there and know exactly how many years that Dennis has been doing. Oh, it's great, great time, as always, spent talking Clinton football with Dennis Smith. When we come back, we'll keep on kind of talking that, the rest of 4A1, merits at Fairview tonight, tough one for the Oilers, but kind of go break down the scenarios in both of those districts with the games tonight, what's happening, who's matching up, and what the implications are with the results from the games on this Week 9 Friday night in high school football. It's Week 9 of high school football. That means the district title races are heating up, playoff positioning is up in the air, and that's certainly the case in both District 4A1, which where Elk City, Clinton, Weatherford reside, and also in the District A1, which Merritt and Sarah Burns Flat are in. As far as tonight's game, Elk City and Clinton, we've talked about it all week long, and I think Dennis brought up a couple of things that we have kind of been, you know, either off air or on air, what we've been talking about. And I think the ability for the Elks to first off start strong on any broadcast we've made this year, it's imperative that the Elks don't get behind, because they're not really a team that's built to come back. Having said that, you wonder if that's the same way with Clinton, just because of the style of their attack. You know, they've been able to hit the big plays on the run game especially. Over the last 3 or 4 weeks, it seems like every time you turn around, it's Seabolt from 60, Jones from 70, over and over and over. And so that's going to be a big key, I think, to limit those big plays, obviously, and make Clinton drive the ball instead of just hand it, you know, pitch it one time and it's a touchdown.
Right.
So I think the first of the game is going to be really, really important for the Elks, and just matching the physicality of what Clinton brings. Dennis said it exactly right, and I had it on my list to ask him about, and he just went ahead and answered. But when you look out there tonight, especially Elk City's defensive line versus the Clinton offensive line, Elk City's guys are going to be bigger.
Right.
They are. But can they match the physicality of what Clinton's going to bring? And then also, can that defense stay disciplined to where you're supposed to be? Because to me, watching Seabolt and watching Jones, they are as good a cutback runners as I've ever seen over there. You know, a lot of times when you think of a Clinton tailback, you think of pitch sweep, make one cut, and gone where the blocking is.
Right.
Down the sideline.
They put
these
it in
guys,
the fifth gear and they're gone.
That's right. Yeah, it's just a one cut, and they just outrun every angle there is. These guys have the ability to do that, but they're so much better than just that, because there's tons of times where it is. Yeah. And it also feels like, honestly, plays going right get cut back left a lot.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, it's a pitch sweep, but the hole is over the center.
Yeah, that's wherever, like they'll pitch it on the weak side and then
come all the way back. That's
have
right.
That space. And another thing I noticed, and I went back and watched film last night too, it was on those cutbacks. I kept looking for holding. Are they cheating? Mm-hmm. I kept looking for holding, and it's not there because it's like they all are on the same page.
That's right.
Whereas they know when that cutback happens, you start seeing them still legally block, but then when that against the grain factor goes mm-hmm. in, you just see their hands go up and they let them. They're like, all right, they give that final push, they let them go. Like, if I block anymore, they're probably going to call me for holding. So that's a lot of discipline in there too. So that's something else. The Elk City's got to answer discipline for discipline. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And they're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to match speed for speed. And we got speedy guys on our team. But the recovery too, you know, you can't over pursue because Clinton will make you pay.
Mm-hmm.
The cutback, you got to understand, okay, we got to recover. We got to get back. We got to take right angles. You know, give up, that's fine. Give up the 10 yards. Don't give up the 80 yards.
That's right.
So it's going to be a lot of disciplined defense that's going to have to limit Clinton's success tonight.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Just the way, just that vision. They're really good at that on offense. You know, it's going to be strength versus strength, man. Elk City's ran the ball
yes.
on everybody.
Yes.
Bethany included.
Yeah.
Even though the Elks didn't win that game, the Elks have ran the football on everybody. I was going to go back and see. I want to say 200 on the ground against every team they played. I'm really confident that that's true.
Here's a stat no one's talking about. And we'll leave it at this and we'll move on and look at other games. I'm sure 38 minutes in, people want to hear about other games. But here's a stat no one's talking about, and I want to know what your thoughts about it, if it's a factor. Elk City is well, let me go back. Let me think about that. I'd have to look back. I might be wrong.
Go ahead. I probably know.
Well, they played Heritage Hall, who is obviously still undefeated,
mm-hmm.
and they lost. Okay. Mm-hmm. Newcastle, I think, still has a winning record.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And they had success against them, beating them by
28-14.
Haven't played anybody with a winning record since, I believe, at the time. Elk City.
Possibly Chickasha would be the only one.
Yeah, but at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if they – Elk City obviously has a winning record. I don't know if that's a thing. Has Clinton been challenged is what I'm saying. And when they were challenged, they lost. And it's a good Heritage Hall team, and there's a lot of factors in that one. Weather was a factor. I know a lot. Clinton turned the ball over a lot. If they held on the ball, some say they probably – could have made that game a little closer. And we kind of followed that. It was close at half, and then Heritage Hall mm-hmm. ran away from them. The reason I bring that up is Elk City the most talented, successful team that Clinton has played since Heritage Hall?
Oh, yeah. I don't think – them are Newcastle.
And does that mean something? I mean, is that something? You know what I mean?
100%.
Sure,
I think
the numbers
can
look good for Clinton, and they're beating people, you know, mm-hmm. To a pulp. But who? Weatherford? Well, we know who Weatherford is now. You see what I'm
Elgin
saying?
Elgin Cash. I know what you're saying.
We common opponents here.
I think it's fair to say that the best team each team has played, they lost to.
Say that again?
I think it's fair to say the best team that each team has played so far, they lost to.
I agree.
Clinton, yeah. I think Heritage Hall is the best team they've played by a pretty wide margin.
Yeah.
Without getting that Millwood team game in. The Elks, you know, Pampa, I think, is a definite step below Bethany. But honestly, you know who's pretty good? When we watched that game, didn't think they had a chance. But you know who's liable to make the 5A playoffs? Southeast. Southeast is 4-4. Playing El Reno for a playoff spot.
I was wondering why Mark was having their coach on yesterday.
Yeah,
but
4-4.
I didn't look it up. I was driving. I thought, well, is he just getting them on, getting them airtime because they're in the metro, or are they doing something?
No, 4-4, 2-3 in that district. Playing El Reno tonight for the last spot.
Well, I'll be.
And, you know, we thought playing them, golly, they have a few guys that have a bunch of talent, but not a ton. You know, but anyway, I think it's fair to say Elk City's played a better schedule than Clinton.
I'd agree there.
I really do.
Yeah. And listen, nobody has to
apologize. It doesn't matter tonight. Right.
I mean, I've seen people knock Clinton and say, oh, they don't play anybody. Well, they're playing who they have to play in the district. It's not their fault. And they went and they scheduled teams. I mean, they scheduled Millwood, didn't get to play them because Millwood didn't have enough players academically. That's not Clinton's fault.
That's right.
They challenge themselves with Heritage Hall every year, it seems like. So, I mean, they don't have to apologize to anybody. Just like Oak City doesn't have to apologize to anybody for the schedule that they put up. We needed to get those confident wins against Guymon and Southeast, as you mentioned. That's why we scheduled those teams, and it's paying off now.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, Pampa, they finally lost a game. Did you see that?
Yes.
Last week?
Yes. They were undefeated.
They scored 60 points and lost. 75 to 60. Sounds like Elk City Newcastle
a couple years ago. All right. 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock kick for the Elks and Clinton. Big Elk TV, Cool 94 for that one. I think Dennis is right. I think it's going to be a packed house over there in the Tornado Bowl tonight. The rest of 4A1, you got Bethany hosting Weatherford. Cash is at Elgin. Newcastle welcomes Chickasha. The only one, I guess, if a Weatherford upset of Bethany could kind of tilt the apple cart a little bit. Not much, though, because of what's happened. You know, Bethany, I think, is guaranteed the second spot, right? No, they're not. That's not true.
I don't think that's a guarantee.
If the Elks win tonight and then Clinton beats Bethany, they'd be third. So that's wrong.
That's right. Yeah.
A win tonight would guarantee them.
A Bethany win tonight?
I think so. No,
because they can do no
15.
Worse than a one loss.
Yeah, in a three way tie type of thing. Mm-hmm. Either way, Bethany, you know, win that one. They're there for the district title game next week against Clinton. Cash and Elgin doesn't matter in the playoffs. Newcastle and Chickasha does. If Chickasha was able to beat Newcastle on their home field, then all of a sudden that three way tie scenario pops up between Elk City, Newcastle and Chickasha, depending on what the results are. The Elks are in the playoffs. It doesn't matter because the district points spread is too big. And so at this point for Elk City, it's just a matter of 1 through 4, what place you're going to be. And then that game tonight, if Clinton wins, next week's a district title game with them and Bethany, no matter what happens to Bethany, because they can always create the tie and have the tiebreaker with the head-to-head win. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that if Clinton wins, it's happening next week. If the Elks win, then there's all kinds of scenarios that we can talk about come Monday with three-way ties, how that would all shake out with the points and all that kind of stuff. That really gets interesting as far as a district title and then also what happens in Clinton. All of a sudden, if the Elks win tonight, this whole town may be dressed up in maroon and gold because that would be the way that Elk City would win the district if they could beat Newcastle and Clinton beat Bethany. So that's kind of the 4A1. Merritt goes to Fairview tonight. That's a 7 o'clock kick, Paragon TV. And right here on this station, 98.1, the KADS for the radio. Honestly, a win for Merritt would be huge to knock off one of the big dogs in the district. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. And here's why. That game next week with Burns Flat Hill City looms. And the way everything's starting to kind of shake out, that's going to be the game for fourth.
Win or loss for Merritt?
I mean, you could win and go to 3-3 in Burns Flat. They play Thomas. So if they lost at 2-4, but then they would have the 3-4 tiebreak. If it's just two, the winner of that game would have the tiebreaker. Here's the deal. If either can win both, they're in. Because nobody else can get to four wins besides them two.
Ah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, Burns Flat wins two, they're in. Merritt wins two, they're in. Because Texoma and Thomas have only won one game. And there's only two left, so they can't get to four. So that's the easiest way for Merritt or Burns Flat to make the playoffs is just win both games. And looking at the schedule, Burns Flat Dill City has a lot better chance of doing that with Thomas and then Merritt versus Merritt having to go up to Fairview tonight.
Yeah, Fairview's
and then
always
play
tough.
The Eagles.
Yeah, Fairview's a good team. But, I mean, Merritt is hosting Burns Flat. There's that. That's always a thing. And Merritt has come on late, playing a better brand of football than they were earlier in the year. So they have a shot.
Both teams are in pretty good shape in the points.
I mean, that Thomas game was closer than the score indicated.
Oh, yeah. It was a one-score game when Thomas had the ball and a pick six.
Yeah, but kudos to Merritt, though, you know.
That might be the difference.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Yeah,
that pick six with the points might end up being the difference between a playoff spot and not, because when you look right now, Merritt's got plus 12, Burns Flat's minus 8, and Texoma's minus 45. So the Red Devils' best case scenario is minus 15.
Yeah.
So then if you're the Oilers, you know, I think it's coming down to whoever wins Merritt Burns Flat next week. Because even in a three-way tie, the point differential because they're all going to beat each other, right? Burns Flat's beat Texoma. Texoma beat Merritt. So if Merritt beats Burns Flat, even with the loss tonight, that creates that three-way tie, and they're, you know, then the points are going to shake out how they shake out for the fourth spot.
Right. Whew. Question on the text line.
Go ahead.
We all know this answer. Oh. When was the last time Elk City went to Clinton and beat them at the bowl at their house?
1998.
We all know that. We were both there. We didn't even know each other.
1998 in an absolute downpour.
Yes. Cold, rainy night.
Do you remember the score?
I don't. I just remember crying and no one knew it because I was getting rained on.
19-0. Don't forget to make your picks in the Western Oklahoma Realty College. Pick 'em. Got until 11 in the morning to get your picks made for Week 8 of college football. Thank you to Tyler Harrison, Robbie Allen, and all the gang at Western Oklahoma Realty. People before property is their motto. For all your real estate needs, contact Western Oklahoma Realty. They will help you out with any and everything that you could possibly need. Let's talk a little bit about last night. I think the early turnover, the turnovers by Arizona kept that score a little bit further down than what we both thought. We both thought it'd be in the 30s. Instead, it was right there in the 20s with the turnovers from Arizona kind of allowing Green Bay to play a little bit slower and not have to try to catch up. But it comes down, the Arizona defense makes a great stop at the goal line. Any of the people in Wisconsin don't think that's right, but that's the way it was ruled.
Sorry.
Murray drives him down from the one all the way to, what, the four-yard line, three-yard line on that last play.
Yeah.
And throws the back shoulder a fade to A.J. Green. A.J. Green has literally no idea it's coming to him. And then just an amazing catch by the Green Bay corner, Douglas. Kind of reached his left hand out there, kind of stopped it, and then grabbed it and stayed in bounds for the game-sealing interception in the red zone. First interception in the red zone all season from Murray. And Green Bay escapes 24-21. Mercury Morris and all the rest of the 1972 Miami Dolphins pop the champagne because there will not be an undefeated team to again this year. It wasn't the shootout, the offensive fireworks, and I think we both expected.
Right.
But it was a really competitive game between two pretty damn good teams.
Yeah, that's what we expected, though. That one, that part of it we did. That was just – now the question is, whose fault was it? Was it Murray's? Was it Green's? Initially, I'm yelling at the TV, Green, what are you doing? Because, you know, about halfway to – you know, I expect him to turn around and catch it right in the belly or something. But then as it got closer, I expect him to go, okay, he's not going to make the catch, but he's going to defend it or it's going to be knocked down. He didn't even – he just turned the other way and my jaw dropped. So whose fault was it? What's your hot take on that one? Whose fault was it? We know what people said, but what it looked like initially, what did you think? Who did you think? Who's to blame?
I mean, you immediately think the receiver, right? Because the quarterback's in control.
Right, right.
And so I'm not going to tell you that it's not. The one thing that I would like to see from Kyler, you know, he says, we weren't on the same page. It cost us. I really don't know what happened. I would like to see him, whether or not it's true or not, and whether or not he doesn't even have to say this behind closed doors, but out in front of everybody when he's asked about it, you'd kind of like to see him say, listen, I'm the quarterback. I'm in charge of making sure everybody's on the same page and getting the communication right. That's on me for not making it clear enough to AJ what the play was. Whether or not he even believes it or not, you know, you just kind of like to see that. And it felt like with the answers between him and also Kingsbury, they were doing all they could not to throw him under the bus while not really taking responsibility for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's just one of those small things. I mean, it was clear A.J. Green didn't get the signal. Now, whose fault is that? Probably a little bit of both.
Yeah. Yeah, the excitement part of the game, you know, I know they had one timeout left, but they were hurrying in the play, you know, crowds a buzz. I mean,
they didn't have any.
At that time, they didn't have a timeout?
No.
I thought they had one.
No, they called the timeout after the run play.
Okay, so point is, I guess everybody could take a little bit of the blame. You know, got to make sure that everybody is on the same page. That starts with the head coach, starts with QB1. And, you know, and then A.J. Green, was he paying attention? Did he hear it? Did he not understand it and then walk away from the huddle when he probably should have looked at him and go, hey, you got to tell me what this is or something? I don't know. But I think a little bit of everybody's to blame on that one.
Yeah, that's what's crazy is coming out of a timeout because they, you know, Murray got tackled.
Yeah.
They kind of wasted a little bit of time coming back to the huddle. They handed it off to Edmonds. He got down to the four, and then they called their final timeout at that point. But it was an audible, so it wasn't like it was the play called on the sideline. Everybody acknowledged that it was an audible, and just the signal wasn't communicated all the way fully for both to understand what was happening. So, good game. Wouldn't shock anybody if that was the NFC title game later on in the year between the Pack and the Cardinals. Both are really good teams. Both are going to be playoff teams. Both be fighting to win. Well, the Packers going to win their division. Just a matter of Arizona can outlast the Rams.
Well, let's just hope that's not the NFL title game.
I hope not.
Or NFC title game.
I certainly hope not. But there's a possibility it could be.
Oh, sure. It's a deep playoff game. It's going to be possible.
Oh, gosh.
We'll see.
Have you seen the early projections, like right going into the week?
Before last night, I saw one.
Gosh, it was Dallas and the Rams in the first round. You're like, whoa.
Yeah, that was probably the same one.
Pretty strong for the first game. Anyhow.
But that was as Dallas as a 4 seed?
Yes.
You think they'd get any higher than that?
Last night didn't help.
Yeah.
With Green Bay winning. But, you know, there's going to be tiebreakers. There's going to be games that'll change all that. But, yeah, you're just thinking, man alive. That's a pretty tough wild card game if you get the Rams right off the bat. But
at least it's in Dallas.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Would be.
College football this weekend. Sooners and Tech. I think that is such a fascinating matchup. Just depending on what Tech shows up, what Oklahoma, do they start to iron out defensive problems or not? You know, Tech hasn't been the explosive Tech that everybody thinks of, really and truly. They like to run it with Sir Roderick Thompson. You know, as a comma, the receiver started out hot. Then when the quarterback, Shaw, got hurt, he's kind of disappeared a little bit. Oklahoma's offense has been better with Williams, there's no doubt, but that defense has got to figure out something to slow Tech down.
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be other than getting a little bit more healthier and playing your true position instead of moving people around. But
did you hear Benito?
I didn't hear him, but I heard maybe what he said, so they're just not practicing hard, something to that effect.
Yeah, and immediately you think I heard Mark talking about this yesterday, and I think he's dead on. I don't think he's calling out his teammates. I think he's calling out his head coach because they're not allowed to practice the way they want to, the physicality that they want to practice with, if that
right.
makes sense.
Yeah.
Because he kept on talking about kept on talking about game reps and that kind of thing. I think we may be onto something here. With the practice, the defense,
and I get
frustrated.
You
try to keep everybody.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Everybody healthy, especially with the injuries that are kind of mounting up.
And maybe they're not letting them practice because, like, listen, we have to play 9 in a row before our first bye. I can't get everybody hurt before our first bye week. So I get that side of it, but on the other side, you play like you practice.
Yep.
And if you practice soft, you're going to play soft.
I think that we're starting to see a little insight into what's happening, Pokes. Homecoming against Kansas, you wouldn't figure that would be much of a game. Of course, we didn't figure it was last week either. That looks like an OSU win pretty easy in my mind.
I got the best text message. I don't want to bring it to air. I love corrective text, not predictive text.
Oh, yeah?
From the text line, my personal text line. How about we just play the best players, Grinch, you dumb duck?
Oh, dear. Turns out, I'm guessing we probably couldn't bring that to air if it wasn't correction. I mean, there's nothing more funny than seeing somebody mad text you and you know they're
so
mad
quick.
Watching a game. And then he goes, that ducking pass was awful. I know, man.
Duck you, Texas.
What was Daffy doing?
Are we watching Oregon? What are you doing?
The games around the country, there's a couple of really good ones. Michigan State hosting Michigan. You know, I could have swore last week that said it was a Friday night game. I could have swore. Or maybe I just thought, you know what? It didn't. You know why? In my mind, Halloween was Saturday because it said the 30th.
Okay.
That was just me not knowing the dates.
Yeah.
Anyway, Michigan State hosting Michigan tomorrow, 11 o'clock. That's going to go a long way into starting to unmuddy Big Ten East
right.
playoff picture.
Yeah, I can't put my I can't get an idea of who could win this game. I know I said earlier I kind of like Michigan because they've turned into this boring team that wins, right? Mm-hmm. But Michigan State, they've kind of been the darling of college football, and it is at Michigan State at East Lansing. But Michigan's a favorite, so I don't know. It's a rivalry game. It's one of those flip a coin and hope it lands on the one you picked.
Michigan State won this game last night last year is like a 24-point favorite.
State did?
Yep. So that'll be maybe a rallying cry for Michigan. Texas at Baylor. I think this is the end. Everybody is starting to notice that Baylor's only got one loss, starting to build them up as a team that has in Arlington in a few week 12 title game. See how they can handle the prosperity with Texas coming in off his after the bye week.
Yeah, Sarkisian still looking for his first, marquee win as a head coach. Couldn't do it against Arkansas. Obviously lost to OU, lost to OSU. And he still has chances against Baylor, Iowa State. I don't know. It's in Baylor, and I kind of lean towards, but I really like Baylor. I don't know why I do. I just kind of like, I really like him.
Don't look now, though. You mentioned the two games back-to-back that the Longhorns have.
Okay.
They're not out of it.
No, I know. That's why I didn't say that. I almost said it, but they're not out of it.
They're not out of
it. They're not out of it. Big 12 title, that is.
Yep. They're not completely out of it. It hurts them to lose to the two teams they lost to, though, mm-hmm. with the way that things are shaking out.
They could win out, and there you go.
Yeah, Oklahoma State would still have two losses, though.
Yeah, but
OU and OSU would only have one, depending on, if things go sort of to plan. But
how would that work out? Iowa State would have two losses in the conference.
Well, runs out but loses to Oklahoma, then Oklahoma State is in, it's bedlam. Because the margin of victory between OSU, Baylor, and I beat each other, and OSU's margin of victory is higher than the rest. So that's how that would work. If it's a three-way tie with two losses between those three teams. What else we got? Mississippi, Ole Miss on the road at Auburn. Auburn's quietly 5-2, number 18 in the country. Put a scare in the Rebs.
Rebs. It's going to be a hard. I like Ole Miss and Matt Carroll.
Penn State.
Corral. I like old Matty over there.
What about Penn State? Can they bounce back after two straight in the horseshoe? Everybody's darling is Ohio State. They're playing great since they lost to Oregon.
Franklin doesn't even know who he's playing this week. That's another. He called it the Big House. Did you see that?
Yeah. Oops.
He's already checked out. His bag's already packed.
He's dreaming. He's California dreaming.
He's California dreaming.
USC.
Ohio State's going to big. They're 18.5-point favorites. I think they cover that easy. I feel like course over here. Not so fast. Ohio State big.
All right.
Don't you?
Give me a no.
No?
I think Penn State's going to rise up. I don't think they're going to beat them, but I think it's going to be closer than closer than the experts think.
Who's your upset? Quickly. What's your
Houston
upset?
Houston over SMU.
All right.
But that's not an upset because Houston's favored.
Exactly. Mine's North Carolina beating Notre Dame in South Bend.
See, isn't Kentucky an underdog against Mississippi State?
Everybody loves them. They are a 1-point dog.
Okay, there you go. There's an upset. Number 12 beating unranked, but by the point spread, that would be an upset. I actually think I don't think they're going to beat them. But you know who I think is going to put up one heck of a fight tomorrow?
Who's that? Florida over
the Florida Gators.
Florida and Georgia.
I don't think they're going to
win, but do you think
I think they're going to put up one heck of a fight.
They're a two touchdown dog, so yeah, that's one of those games like the Red River Rivalry. You never
it
know.
Is. And normally when it goes kind of the weird way, it's this way.
Yeah.
You don't see Georgia upsetting Florida very often, but you see Florida throwing the wrench into Georgia's plans a bunch.
Yeah.
Everybody have a great weekend. 7:00, Big Elk TV, Elks and Clinton.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.